You should have your Bibles once again open to Romans chapter 8, verse 28. Probably one of the most well-known verses in all the Bible. And again, as we now in this session are going to approach looking at more of the details, beginning to look at the details of verse 28, we've got this 12-verse large body of section of information dedicated to one main goal. The whole thing is dedicated to one main goal, and that's to produce absolute confidence in the curriculum and in the education you're about to receive and in the Father who designed it. And yet the road to get there, the road to accomplish that one main goal, requires numerous adjustments to a son's inner man to achieve that goal. Because the truth is, no matter who you are, there's numerous snags in a son's inner man upon which he can get hung up, which is what a snag is designed to do, is designed to hang you up, to be impeded when it comes to achieving that goal of absolute confidence in the curriculum and the way our Father designed it and in Him. And the method of the Father, even though you can talk about the goal of achieving absolute confidence under one big umbrella of 12 verses, and even go through the body of information that starts out with the statement of confidence in verse 28, and it does do that. Verse 28 is a statement of confidence. There's no doubt about it. It's a confidence. And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to His purpose. It starts out with a statement of confidence, but it does it, as I said, he kind of lays it down on the table in front of the son to get that ball rolling, to start generating the confidence. He starts out with a confident statement. It doesn't start off with a statement of confidence that says, this is the end result of it all. It starts off with a confident statement that has to have proof given to it. It doesn't start off with a statement that can even be, to use this expression, stood on confidently. You can't stand on Romans 8:28 with any amount of confidence if that's all you got. It is a confident statement, but you can't stand on it confidently, at least with a full measure of confidence, without something else said about it. It's made that way. It's not because I'm trying to say it's that way. It's designed that way. You have to know why. And so, to get the ball rolling, the Father says this, puts it in front of the Son, and I say it that way to you so that you realize that verse 28, when you read that verse, it is a statement of confidence, but the reasons why you can't confidently rely on verse 28 yet isn't sitting in verse 28 itself. It's sitting in the next two verses, 29 and 30. In fact, a detailed reading of verse 28 should really make it so that you realize as you read it, the little guy in the back of your head says, you know, I don't really have any confidence that what it says is true or will work unless I get further information that produces that confidence of that statement. That's the way it's designed. And verses 29 and 30 go on to provide the information that gives you the absolute confidence you need in regard to verse 28. So it starts off, and we know. By beginning with the word and, the Father, unlike the other, as you look through your Bible, the other words of logic, as you've gone through this thing, the Father now gives and as an additional element. And he now sets this one additional component before his son's eyes. Everything else he's going to say for the rest of the chapter is going to have to do with that verse. Everything. It means when you get down there and Paul's talking about I'm persuaded and he's height, depth, and any other creature, all these kinds of things, everything is said so that that verse really is up and working properly in you. And therefore, he sets this by beginning with the word and additionally before his son, and brings this thing that the son may not even have been thinking about as he finished verse 27. He brings this to his attention. That's what a father needs to do from time to time. Because a father kind of sits up where he can see the whole parade. He can see its beginning and he can see its ending. And he can see all the units of the parade in between. The son's in the parade. He can't see the beginning of it. He can't see the ending of it. But the father knows how the whole thing is going, and he knows how it's all put together with all the units and all the floats and all the balloons and all the bands. But what he's wanting the son to do is to get out of the parade and come up with him and look at it. And say, look what I did when I designed all this. I made it so that nowhere along the line are you going to be in a situation that whatever happens to you won't be profitable or beneficial to sharpening, honing, developing the skills and the skill sets and the experience and all that my word is able to do vocational wise, to not just educate you but train you for what you're going to face in the heavenly places. Now, I just dropped something in your thinking there that you may not, it may have gone right over your head, but I'm going to come back to that someday before we get to the end of this chapter. When I said what you're going to face in the heavenly places. Because this isn't just preparing you for life here. This is preparing you for life there. Just set that aside for now. But even though this thing may not have been occurring in the son's thinking up to this point, it may be. Maybe some of this began being generated. But whether it is or not, the father has to have his son address this. And so he knows that it now has to occur. This thought has to occur in his son's mind and in his thinking, and whatever difficulties he's going to have with it have to be brought out and dealt with now. Or when it comes time for us to actually get into this course and start going through it together, and all that he's going to face out in the future in regard to opposing him in it, not just from an adversary without, but from other elements as well that the father knows about because he sees the whole parade, we got to get this developed and get this attitude adjusted and set right now. This is the job at hand. And so he knows, the father knows, this has to occur to his son. If it hasn't, I'm going to make it occur by making the statement. And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. And we know. And just to wow you, the Greek word oida, O-I-D-A. Remember Greek? O-I-D-A. Oida. Oida is always a perfect tense of the word know. It actually comes from a Greek word that means, I didn't think even think about this, this is off the cuff, but it just shows you how much of this junk is still in me. Oida actually occurs from a Greek word of the Greek word horao. It comes from that. And horao, when you think about horao, you think about horizon. Horao, a horizon. You see. And you think, well, how did you get from seeing to knowing? Ever listen to somebody on a telephone? You're talking on the phone. Oh, I see. Oh, okay. Yeah, I see. I see. They're not actually seeing with these. They're knowing with their mind. But oida is always used in a perfect tense. To know now with the result that you will know throughout the duration of whatever the context is. And when we come to appreciate this, knowing that, I only bring that out not so much to gain any theological understanding of it or any depth of understanding, but to show you the force of what's being said. And we know that all things work together for good. What does it mean here, though, when Paul says, and we know? What does it mean here to know? And you can kind of start by, like I said, I know that, no pun intended, that the word know is a very, very broad, multifaceted, and multi-useful word. But, and we're not looking for anything clairvoyant here, but just in general. And we know. Yeah. Yeah, it's a confident expression. It's an expression of confidence in information you're being given. And you said what? We've learned some things. So when you learn something and you know something, what is it about that something that you know? I mean, just to probe you a little deeper here. Yeah, awareness. There's an awareness. Clear comprehension. That's good. Those are things that didn't write down, but they're all they're perfectly in line with this. If you were to go to a dictionary and look up the word know, probably right out of the box, you would deal with it being something that you recognize. You perceive something. You recognize it. You identify. And we know. We recognize. We identify. We perceive that all things work together for good. Now just stop right there. We know that all things work together for good. Now, I'm going to ask you to think about this a little more expansive. And what I mean by that is expand that into the rest of that phrase. Well, in fact, let's stop that phrase with the word good. And we know that all things work together for good. Especially when you have work together. And we know that all things work together. It's not just there's two sides to this coin, so to speak. There's one side of being able to perceive that all things work together, recognize and identify that. But there's another aspect to knowing that's in view here. I'm just curious. I'm not trying to make you feel embarrassed or stupid. I'm just curious because you're all smarter than I am, that when he says, and we know that all things work together for good. And when you think about all things work together for good, and I know that what that's supposed to do, what controls every thought and word I have in that, is that that's going to generate a level, a full measure of confidence in me. For what end? What's the confidence in me going, what's the purpose of me having the confidence? That's true, but I think it needs to be said a little better. Because it's not purely, what I'm after is purely knowledge of God. Remember, I'll tell you what will help. Remember, we're in a section of perceiving the words of understanding. Yeah, it's the knowledge, but it's also how it's going to work for us. What I'm after is when you say, and I know that all things work together for my good, what are you intending to do with that? Apply it. You're going to operate upon it. One of the aspects of we know that all things work together for good is the aspect of being able to look at that statement and with understanding and perception and recognition identify that that's true. We know that all things work together for good. But that's the no means more here than just perception. It means I know it and I'm going to operate on that. Because I know it. I know, I perceive, and I'm going to operate on the fact that all things work together for my good because I am one that loves God. I am the called according to His purpose. And I think that's critical and important discrimination of how no is used in that context. Because the thing that alerts me to that is not just the term no, but it's knowing what this is designed to do. That's why I spent so much time going over what it's designed to do. I'm supposed to take the curriculum my Father has and with absolute confidence operate upon it. And therefore, the other aspect of knowing in view here is to know, to perceive, recognize, and operate upon that fact, that statement of confidence. And we know this it's not the kind of thing that we encountered, by the way, back there in chapter 6. If you've thought about that, I just want to dispel this. When we have this phrase, and we know, In fact, you can come back in chapter 6 and just look at, say, verse 3. When we got introduced to our sanctified position in Christ, and Paul brings up the issue here in verse 3, know ye not that so many of us as were baptized into Jesus Christ were baptized into his death? Were you supposed to already know that? Yes, you were. There is something that we learned back about a Redeemer and his redemption that made it so when Paul said, know ye not, you're supposed to already know that. And remember when we went through these, the way the information was presented back there, all those know ye not, knowing this, as he has down there in verse 6, and then you have a knowing that that comes up later on there. You have another know ye not that occurs down in verse 16. All of those know ye not, knowing this, knowing that, were done as if this was something that we should already know. And we had to go back, and we had to, if you didn't know that, we had to go back and recognize that baptism, even though it's the first time the word was used, was no surprise, because baptism is what goes along with being sanctified. Baptism goes along with what a Redeemer does when he redeems you. Baptism is a what? An identity. It's an identification. And he's identifying you with him as a, and every Redeemer did that. Ruth was identified with Boaz. So was Naomi. Actually, he redeemed Naomi, and Ruth came along as part of the package. Now, I'm only bringing that out to say this is not that. This isn't, and I stumbled around with this for a while. This isn't as if you've got there in the Romans 6 passage, you've got that kind of presentation of information back there. And the kind of discourse that's carried on there is really a technique of making a presentation of information or an argument. I'm not talking about argument as if you're yelling at each other, but an argument where you come along and state something as a known. You state it as a given, or bring it up as in a questioning manner as an issue that should be known. The way in which that's done when you do that is always dependent upon what is said immediately before that. When you have know ye not, that statement there in verse 3 of chapter 6 can be said that way and meant that you should already know this, because it's dependent upon what was immediately said preceding it, just before it. And that's why it's not a hard and fast rule. And again, when we talk about English grammar, when we talk about word usage, get over this idea of standardizing everything. That every time you see a word used one way, it's going to be used that way all the time. Don't get the idea that every time when we come to English grammar or grammatical style, that it's set in concrete as one and only hard, fast rule in the way in which it's going to be done. So back there you have a similar phrase, know ye not, or knowing this, knowing that. You can kind of say, well, that's kind of similar to the way Romans 8:28 opens up, and we know. Well, am I supposed to already know something? Is this saying, and we know, based upon information that I just was told, that I should know that all things work together for good? No. That's not at all what's going on here. Because that's not a hard and fast rule every time you come across such an expression. It's got to mean that this information is something we should already know. The reason that that's different is that you're dealing in an entirely, the context won't allow it. These are differing issues of what we might call, or what I call, I don't know if anybody else would call it this, the style of the English language. And it's the information that's given immediately in the context prior to the knowing expression there in Romans 6 that determines how you're supposed to, in fact, that determines it here. You look for information just preceding it. And that determines, that context prior to the knowing expression determines how you're supposed to look at what you're being told you have knowledge-wise or is a known that you should already know about. And if it's zero, then it's not talking about that. And it is zero. There's nothing said anywhere in Romans 8 at all that is precursor to this. And here in Romans 8:28, we don't have anything immediately. In verse 26 and 27, we were dealing with sonship prayer. And before that, we were dealing with the creature and with our inheritance and all of that. We don't have anything immediately in the context that's given us something we're supposed to be coming along and say, when Paul says, and we know that all things, and we say, yeah, already knew it. I already knew that before you ever said it. No. You read that and you say, wow, that's an amazing statement. I hope you can back that up. Well, indeed I can. Wait till you hear what I say in the next two verses. But you're not supposed to be coming along saying, yeah, I already know that, which is why that's one of the reasons why it doesn't begin up there with the words, know ye not. It begins, and ye know. And God uses, and Paul uses, this magnificent way of bringing us into himself and the Father, the Son, and the Spirit as this we. And you want to say, what do you mean we? Because I feel like, I don't know. When I first read Romans 8:28 with some kind of honesty, I felt like what George Gobel used to talk about. Whenever you were invited to a black tie formal affair, and I'm the only guy there in brown shoes. And I felt like a pair of brown shoes. What do you mean we? Because I feel left out of this. You are left out until you go through verses 29 and 30. But we have a technique of making a stunning, powerful statement, and it is a statement being made so that it's to be dealt with by us as something that we're supposed to know. We're supposed to know this, and more than that, we're supposed to operate upon this. This is going to be the operational, listen to this carefully, principle by which you're going to live as a son. If ever there is an unforgotten, not to be forgotten, not to be put down, not to be ever out of the back, relegated to the back of your mind, always up front, always the very focal point of everything that's happening to you, it's Romans 8:28. Because you're going to operate upon that. And that's going to become your perspective for what happens. No matter what the stock market does. I hope it goes back up. I know some of you got killed in that thing. And I hope for all of that stuff. But the fact of the matter is, I know full well what may be waiting for me at the end of teaching, or not at the end of it, but somewhere in the first part of teaching sonship education. That's fine. But this is as broad as it sounds. All things work together for good in this context. It means nothing out of this context. It means everything in this context. And that's going to be what I'm going to operate upon. But not just because I have a verse that becomes a slogan and believe it because my Father said it. But because I have the underlying effectual working of why that's true. And that therefore means that everything I look at in my life now is going to be lived and operated upon that way. And to do that, and I mean the only way to do that, you have to have absolute confidence, not a quiver, not a shudder or shadow of a doubt, that that is the truth and the reality of what's going on. And I say that knowing that you're going to face every screaming cell of your being, internally and externally, is going to somehow try to tell you that's not true. And the only thing that can tell you that's true is your Father's words. The knowing here is a term of absolute confidence. That's the aim or objective of the statement, but it really hasn't been explained to us yet so that we can come along and say, yes, I do know that. And yes, I do, not daily, but every beat of my heart, operate upon that. I don't have to wake up and be made aware of Romans 8:20. It's no different than having to wake up and remember. Now, there's times, and you ever been so sound asleep that you wake up and you have no idea what day it is? That happens to me sometimes. And you wake up and you think, I don't even know what day this is. Usually on Sunday morning that happens to me. But I have, after these many years, I never, ever wake up and have to hit the floor and then say, look in the mirror and say, I'm married. I never have to be reminded. I never have to remind. It's just life. That's who I am. I'm a husband. That's a role I was never in until one day I committed to that and said, I do. And once that I do happened, after a while, it became who I am identity-wise. I wear a ring that makes that apparent to some people, but I don't need the ring. It's not a reminder to me of anything. In fact, to be honest with you, it's an encumbrance, although it did save my hand once. Honestly, it did. I had some idiot who was trying to look, and Steve will appreciate this, he was trying to see if a 2x12 that was 20 foot long, 2x12 on a stack of 2x12s, he had two or three of them bent up like this, and he was trying to find one that wasn't cupped. And if you know what cupping is to a board, he was trying to eyeball it, and I had something down in that I was reaching for, and he dropped those boards on my hand, and my ring kept it from smashing my hand, my fingers. Flattened my ring out pretty good, but it kept my... But I don't need that ring because it's who I am. I'm a husband. I'm also now in another status. I'm a father. And now as a status of being a Christian, a believer in Christ, and one who is identified with Him through sanctification, now I've got another status that I'm made aware of. I'm a son of my Father. And as a son, I am to operate upon the knowledge that all things work together for my good. That's to be my operational procedure. And therefore, that's why you can come along and realize once this does work, that becomes who I am. That's not going to be something that I ever forget or lay aside. And so, as it stands right now, as far as what we're doing, we don't know that yet. We just have this statement that we are to know it, we are to operate upon it. And verse 29, that's why it starts off with a 4. That's why when you get down to verse 31, it says, what shall we say to these things? Because that's all now been accomplished. So the opening phrase of verse 28, and we know, tells us that the whole body of information contained in verse 28, 29, and 30 comes along and tells us that verse 28 is declaring something to us that we're supposed to know and operate upon. That flat-out statement, a confident statement. We know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to His purpose. And that verse is declaring to us we're to operate on that. That's what it means when I know it. I just don't know it academically, but I'm going to use it. I'm going to operate upon this. And that's now being put on the table, so to speak, as I've often said, for us to know. And that every bit of the information He's going to be giving to us, our Father, following this, is going to enable us to come along and say, after I go through verse 29 and verse 30, I do know that. I don't need verse 31. I know it at the point of the period after the word glorified at the end of verse 30. I know verse 28 is real. And I know that that's what I'm operating upon. That all things are working together for my good. Now, we've got to do some work on that, but right now, all I'm after is that you appreciate that this isn't something we're supposed to already know, because the immediate context and text doesn't tell us that, but that it is something the Father knows we need to have brought into our mind, and He brings it into our mind by this confident statement, and therefore, the opening expression, and we know, works as a kind of tool or a stylistic way of presenting information, the presentation of knowledge that we now need to deal with, and we now need to get this effectually working within us. If we're going to operate on it, we got to have it working. Rather than just a statement of knowledge that we're either supposed to already be in possession of, or just as a matter of common sense, something that we're supposed to just know intuitively. That's not what he's talking about. Nobody intuitively knows that all things work together for good. Some of them may be able to say it. Some of them may be able to quote it. What's interesting is that even those who try to quote it without their Bible quote it from the King James, even if they think that it's the other way around. It's like John 3:16. I can't find anybody who can quote it out of the NIV without having the NIV in their hand. But they can quote it. Yeah. They'll quote it right out of the King James. But anyway, this isn't trying to just extol the greatness of the King James. It's really an accuracy issue. And so we're not coming to know something intuitively. We're not coming to know this even as something that we're supposed to simply accept just because the statement is being made to us right now by our Father, and Father knows best, and so therefore you should just believe it because He said it. That's inconsistent with a son. That's inconsistent with sonship thinking, adulthood-style thinking. That's childhood thinking. In other words, when verse 28 says, "And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are called according to His purpose," the issue is not that we're going to come along at the end of that verse and say, "Yeah, based upon everything I've gone through so far in my sonship orientation and my sonship establishment, I understand that that's the way it is." No, you don't. You couldn't possibly. Based upon everything we've gone through so far in our sonship orientation and the opening two components of sonship establishment, the issue is that we're brought to a point. That's what He's been doing. He's been bringing us to the point where we are now anticipating. We're kind of leaning forward, so to speak. We're now anticipating, actually getting our hands on the books, cracking them open. We're anticipating, okay, yeah. I got this great inheritance, you know. My Father and I have this great relationship. It's a real two-way, bi-directional relationship. And there's this great occupation and vocation that He has for me and all this kind of thing, and it's not going to be hindered by me not being able to talk to Him about it in sonship prayer, and all of that kind of thing is going on. We've got those things now, but the Father has been bringing us down and bringing us down and bringing us down to this final point. And we're brought to the point where we're anticipating actually dealing with the curriculum. It's like Romans 12 is getting so close we can almost smell it. And we've been told some things about its effectual working, but by nature, we and this is strictly natural. It would be this way with a natural father and a natural son. By nature, we don't have the full measure of confidence yet that we're supposed to have. And I want to say it this way. You don't have the full measure of confidence even though you may think you have it. Or you may imagine you have it. That's why the five probing questions are going to draw out thoughts you haven't thought. You ever have that? I'm sure we've all experienced that in some way or another. We've all gone through educational processes where you thought, gee, I never thought of it that way before. Or I never thought that before. Now that you bring that out, well, I never thought that before. That's what these five questions are going to do. I never thought about this thing that way before. And at the end of it, you're going to be saying, I never ever imagined that this thing was that powerful. That this curriculum was written like this. That it could do this. I never knew that. So, even though you may think or imagine you have the full measure of confidence you need, I know you don't. And more than that, I shouldn't say that. My Father knows you don't. Otherwise, everything from Romans 8:31 to 39 is moot. Why use it? But our Father knows that we don't have that full measure of confidence yet. Not that He wants us to have. And he knows it because he hasn't provided it for us yet. He hasn't provided for us to have it yet. Now I'm going to get to the thing that I said early on when we did all of this, and now we're coming to the point where you should recognize this. The last thing a father does before he begins dealing with his son about the curriculum is he, the father, produces within him, his son, the implicit faith he needs to have in what his father's going to begin to teach him. That's the father's job. And that's why this comes last. And that's also why the context demands that you see it from his perspective. Because as a father with his own natural son, the only one who can produce that trust in his boy is he himself. And the only way he can do that is by allowing his son to see the measures to which he went to craft it all so that his son would succeed with it. Do you see that? Does that make sense? There has to be a point at which a father, if he himself is going to produce the unwavering, implicit faith and trust in his son, to trust him no matter what, before it comes to that demand, to an issue, a circumstance, a situation in life that takes the eyes of his actual, natural, physical eyes and blinds them. And he can't trust anything he sees or hears or experiences. The only eyes he can see with properly are the eyes of his inner man, the eyes of his understanding. In order for a father to produce that kind of trust where when the eyes of his physical body tell him otherwise, he trusts them through the eyes of his understanding. The only way that's possible is to get the son. He doesn't expect you to be able to get up there and understand, well, what's that button for, and what's that cog for, and what's this gear for, and what's this lever do? As much as he wants you to understand and appreciate that that every problem and snag and question you could ever have that would question what I'm about to do with you, when you see what I've done, when you really see what I've done, you can say, I'll trust you with my life. I'll trust you with anything. I do know that all things work together for good. To me that loves you, to me who you've called according to your purpose, because I've seen it from your eyes. I've seen how powerful and strong and put together it is. And though I may not know every detail of it, every one of my heart's hindrances have been addressed, alleviated, and put to rest. Even the ones, Father, I didn't even know I had until you asked me about them, have been addressed, relieved, and put to rest. And I am persuaded, fully persuaded. I'm trying to give you a sense of what's going on here. I'm not trying to be dramatic. I'm just trying to show you that it's the normal thing for a father to do, and the last thing a father would want to do, because the very next thing is to begin teaching him. And he can't have his son coming to class doubting what he's being taught. You may be able to get by, and I mean get by well, in college that way. In fact, I know my own son has done that. He's gotten A's in courses that he not only didn't have any confidence in what he was being taught, but he absolutely disbelieved everything he was being taught. Steve, that's another reason why this education is different from secular education. That can't happen in this education. You can't get by. You can't do what Andrew did at Lewisburg. You can't psych out the professor and just feed him answers that he wants to hear. This is a father who knows that boy's heart. One of the things that drove me crazy about my dad, and I always thought as I was young and going through my adolescence that I would get to the point, I'd get old enough, mature enough, and experienced enough where this all went away. It drove me crazy when he would come up to me and start talking to me and asking me what's wrong and probing me and proving to me, as he would often say, I know you better than you know you. And I always thought I'd get old enough and wise enough and experienced enough. But even the very few days before he died, he did that very thing to me. I know you better than you know you. Your father knows your heart better than you know it. And what he's going to come along and do with you here to produce what he wants to produce is one of the most beautiful, wonderful, to use it in the way that the Brits use the expression, lovely. I love how that even to this day in Great Britain, even grown men can use the expression lovely and not be effeminate about it. The lovely way in which this is all accomplished, as the last thing before the education gets underway, being the last thing makes it so that all the decks are cleared and there's not going to be encountered by you and him any impediment when you start learning the information he's going to teach you. And we know that all things work together for good. Well, we may be a few minutes early tonight, but I don't want to go on to the all things tonight. I think that's a good place to stop. But this is, when I look in my Bible, and I look at Romans 8, 28 especially, but even 14 through the end of the chapter, but especially Romans 8, 28 through 39, I don't just see words. I see beauty. And it's not just power, but there's something beautiful about the way this is crafted. And I'm seeing that through this goofy fine arts thing in my head. But it is a. You ever hear somebody talk about something? They don't mean that it's like a woman's beauty, but they look at it and they say, "Isn't that a thing of beauty?" It's not only a great thing, but it's a thing of beauty in the way that he reads me, and knows me better than I know myself, and that he's able to set me properly before I ever begin his instruction to receive it without any hindrance at all in my heart. And that's, I defy any man who's ever come along and developed any kind of edification process to even come close to equaling that. There is none. So you have something very powerful and very special in these verses waiting for you. And I think what we'll begin doing on Sunday is working together on that next expression, that all things work together for good. All things work together for good. Between now and then, think of that, so that you should be able to have some pretty good understanding of the all things that gets mentioned there that he's talking about. Keep it in the framework of those two things we talked about. a son's education and his sonship establishment, being a son, that sonship status. And secondly, the issue of seeing it from my father's perspective. I may be down in that parade, but he's up above it all, and he knows how it's all going. And he can provide so that all things work together for my good. And that's something, that's the linchpin of this whole thing, of being able to keep those two words, all things, in the context and hold them down and confine them to the context of what's going on here. And then it's great. But once you leave that, it's Katie, bar the door, because then you're back to where we were talking about last lesson. Well, we'll stop right there and pick this up on Sunday with all things working together for good.